This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk, with Steve Beauvais. With market insights and so much more. Talk to Steve now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Steve Beauvais on AM 790 WPRV.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to the Money Talk Show. This is AM 790. Of course, your station for talking business. Hey, the market's going kooky over here, folks. Don't let this shake you out of your game plan. It's not changing my game plan. Market down strong yesterday, down 400 points today. Let's take a look at the broader indexes, as I would have suspected. NASDAQ, S&P, all down across the board. Trade war concerns, most of these emotional things, folks, turn out to not be real. China can't not deal with us, or we can't not deal with them. So this is an overreaction. I'd be willing to bet on it. Can't know for sure until you look back on it after a while. What really affects stock prices is earnings. Earnings. You've all heard the term in the real estate game that the three things that matter most are location, location, and location. That's funny, huh? In stocks, it really is earnings, and they've been good, and they've been growing nicely. However, our economy does run in a cycle. It's about 7 years, and we've had our time. So if our stock market ends this year negative, it would not shock anyone with experience to have a negative year after the previous years. If you're not really young, don't get too fixated on what you hear about, because what you hear about are a lot of aggressive stuff. The S&P 500 can fall by 50%, and it had a 10-year period where it made no gains whatsoever. That's not a real great, reliable investment, in my opinion, by that definition. Do I have some of that stuff in my account? Of course I do. But don't overdo it, and if you're not young, as I'm not, develop a love for dividends if you don't already have it. Can you imagine an investment not growing? Or imagine if you had a piece of real estate that you owned for 10 years and it didn't grow, but you got $1,000 a month rent out of it along the way. Very different investment experience, right? You would say if you bought that real estate property, I held it for 10 years and I didn't make a penny on it. Is that true? No, it really isn't true. You made all those rents. So dividends on stocks are like rents on apartments. And the more fascinating part about rents from, I call them rents, that's funny, dividends from stocks and bonds, it's a good synonym, is that they are determined based on how many shares you have, not what the value is. In other words, if you have $100,000 in the bank and it's making 5% interest, at the end of the, if there's a $100,000 balance, you will have $5,000 of interest. That's 5%. It's based on the dollar value. If the balance of your savings account were to go down to $50,000, then you'd get 5% on $50,000. You get less, right? Because the value is less, right? Okay. What if you have a $100,000 dividend-paying portfolio of stocks and bonds, and the value goes down by 30%? Does that mean your interest goes down, like in the first story? The answer is no. This is what's fascinating about dividends. They are not guaranteed, but they are what's called fixed. And so fixed means they are governed by macro big things that don't change much. So small changes along the way in a company's activity and even in results or reputation tends to not affect the dividend. If that event was to bleed into the long term, then it could, but it would take quite a bit of time. So dividends are proof of profitability. A company does not pay a dividend unless it's profitable, because dividends are after expenses. So I think it's a great thing to have dividends. If you're really young, you don't need to be too concerned. Don't change your philosophy. Stick with what you've been doing and the things we've been talking about here on the Money Talk Show for you younger folks. But as you get a little bit older, because you don't have the time anymore, I'm almost 60 years old. I mean, I've been here, you know, in the business 40 years and on the air almost 25. Any investment that I have, the value of it can stagnate. Any investment can do that. So you want to own 8 to 10 different ones, and every one of them has to pay a dividend. That's my rule. 3% minimum, or I'm not interested in owning it. I don't have any money except for my emergency money in anything that doesn't pay a 3% dividend or better. Occasionally, a little bit less than that, but a municipal bond of 2.5 maybe. Because if 10 years from now, there's no gain to the bond values, the dividends are still always there, and they're used to enjoy life. They're used to fund retirement plans. They're used to purchase cars. They're used to reinvest in more shares. So dividends, dividends, dividends. If you'd like to learn more about dividends, you can call me at 437-5000. Excuse me. 1-888-345-0790. You can probably find some podcasts or back shows. I talk about it a lot. I'm a dividend hound. A lot of clients like that. Tell me again, Steve, what your rule is. It has to pay 3%. It's not going to be in your account. It has to have a dividend of 3%. I make a rare exception to that. That makes me a value investor. That makes me gray-haired, and that makes me a little bit on the older side. I'm 58, if you're interested. But don't plan on retiring for probably quite a while now. Love what I do. Love being here tonight. Look forward to coming in and summarizing what happened during the day. Of course, last couple days have been pretty tough. The message tonight is to not change your strategy based on what happens up or down on any given day or two or week or month. The risk level in my accounts, for me personally, has got to do with my age, how close I am to having saved enough. That means what? I don't have to save anymore. And when you don't have to save anymore, you might not have to work anymore. So when you get to that point, I think the whole thing changes. Once I'm close to being, all set, we'll call it, I don't want anything to go wrong. And minus 50% by having too much in stocks, at my age, would really set you back another decade or so. So if you've been taking high risk, if you've been, 100% equities, 80% equities, and you're anywhere near my age of 58, I think it's a good time for you to calm down. If you need some help calming down, get a professional opinion. We do lots of these in the office. People come in and listen to the show, and we review their 401k plan. We give them a suggestion. Most good professionals, in order to have the opportunity to meet you and bend your ear, that you might be a client, any one of us will help you with that, I'm pretty sure, So ask for a suggestion on how to calm things down. The worst thing that happens is, you make a good return when you might have made a little more. But keep one thing in mind. In the investment world that most of you are dealing with, like 401k plans and equity funds, guess when historically always the worst year always is? You guessed it, right after the best year. That's why you can't get sucked in when you have good times. You got to stick to back to your macro, back to your overall. Be like a fitness plan. Let's say you're a little heavy you want to be, you're borderline diabetic, so you and your doctor develop a exercise and eating plan, that's based on all of this very big macro, solve the problem over the next 10 years, and save your life plan, which is great. But then for whatever reason, you get emotional and decide to, eat a whole bag of potato chips. That's not the plan, right? And although it might have felt good at the moment, it's not going to help you achieve the long-term goal. Goals are tough. They're kind of like magnets. They draw you towards them. So I always believe in having goals and write them down. Everyone that's young, if you don't have the career that you dreamed of yet, write it out. Write out what that would look like and tape it to your refrigerator and look at it every morning before you walk out the door. I did stuff like this a lot of my life when I was young to keep myself motivated. To get where I wanted to be, and I'm happy to say I have a position professionally that I love and have loved for quite some time. But we're here to help you tonight, and when we come back from our first break, we got a real big announcement coming up. Proud father, just something to share with you all. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, a station for talking business, 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790, podcast at 790business.com.
She's real fine, my 409, my 409.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bovay, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome back to the Money Talk Show. Thanks for doing that for me, young man behind the glass. That's the Beach Boys. And the 409 was a Chevy, we found out, not a Plymouth like I thought. That 409 thing came from an IRS code I've been trying to get you all to pay attention to, and I'm not getting anywhere. It's very frustrating. I'm going to say that 80 to 90% of couples listening right now that are retired have an adjusted gross income below $77,000 a year, because the average is about half of that for retired couples in America. So I know that most of you that are retired have, and that's a nice standard of living, probably have a home paid for, you know, some savings. And the common frustration is we have money in the bank earning very little, and it's taxable, and it's frustrating. You probably need a supplement now. This tax law is topic 409, and it just says that if you're married filing jointly and your income is below $77,000, there's an opportunity to invest in certain types of things that pay dividends, like I talk about. But for you, there's a special tax rate, and it could be zero. I met with a gentleman recently who's retiring at 65 next month. And he had a Social Security benefit of $2,000 a month, and that was his own, no pension, but he had a big old 401k plan, you know, that he could pull a lot of money out of. But that would be fully taxable at ordinary income rates, which is the highest tax rate on the street. But instead of doing that, he'll be selling off some stocks that he has, and each year meeting with his tax expert. That's not me. I have a tax expert, to determine how much stock I should sell for him to keep him under the 409 limit so it's all tax-free. And over 5, 6, 7 years, he will sell off this stock, and most of it will be tax-free gains, long-term capital gains as well as dividends. Now, these laws are a little bit, they're funny. They're designed to motivate and reward. So why, if you're in that bracket, do you get a tax-free dividend when other people have to pay the tax? It's to motivate you to invest. The more self-reliant you are, the more self-reliant we all are, the stronger our nation, right? If people are all financially doing well and could take care of themselves and maybe even take care of others as well, this country will be stronger, be less people in need, and that's good for everybody, you know. So check out the topic 409. If you have some cash money, this doesn't help you with IRA accounts or 401k money. It needs to be cash money. But if you have any cash sitting in the bank right now, there's a lot of things that you can do. But keep in mind, I'm talking about leaving the banking world and entering the investment world. Big difference in risk. Now, many of you, I find, if given the opportunity, are a lot like me in that I don't ever feel compelled to sell an investment because it's down if I bought it for the long term and it pays a dividend. So risk is a relative term. If I refuse to sell anything when it's down, there is no risk for me. If there's a lot of risk for you, it's probably your own fault. Panic reacting, selling when markets are down. These are all things you're told not to do by professionals. Yet people do it and can't understand why they lose over and over and over again. It's because you get emotional. Okay, so if you're prone to do that, please. We're in a position right now with these markets where we could have another one of those every 7 year tough years, you know. Don't sell out in it. You know, if you say, I stayed too long, you got to wait through it again, one more cycle. You don't need all of your money the day you retire. Your time horizon for investing is not the date you retire. If you retire at 65, you may live another 20 years. So your investment should be pretty similar at 70 than they are at 60, I think. But they should be moderate, you know, not as aggressive as when you were much younger. There are people, believe it or not, and I know you do believe it because many of you have had this experience. People who didn't have a lot of investment knowledge, people who didn't think they were smart about these things, just plowed the money in and forgot about it, and then now they're rich. It works. It really does work, but it takes 25 years. But isn't it wonderful to think that we have a system in our country, in most developed nations today, you know, 401k plans for saving, where you don't have to be a financial genius, you don't have to have gone to college. If you're just disciplined and save a little money over a long period of time, you can end up in a very, very nice place. And I think that's a wonderful thing to share with people who would otherwise think that you have to be a genius to end up in the end, you know. I'm going to end up okay. I'm no genius. Hard work, discipline, put some money away every single month, like me, for 39 years, never missed a quarter or a month of savings ever, not once. Even during the tough times, savings kept on going no matter what. It was a bill. It's not an option. It's not a luxury. Savings should be considered part of your day-to-day expenses of your life. Put yourself first. Make sure you pay yourself a little. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, a station for talk and business. Hey, today my son Nathan, who you've all been more familiar with lately, he's our history professor on Wednesday nights. He comes in and tries to give our nerdy topic here a bit of an entertainment twist, and he's done a great job with that. Happy to say he passed his Certified Financial Planner Practitioner exam today. 6.5 hours, I believe it is. Congratulations, Nathan. But good for you. That's quite a challenge. When Don and I did it, it was 6 separate exams. A lot easier to prepare for, right, than one big one. So anyway, that's a requirement. That's a requirement to host a show. Wait a minute. Does this guy want my job? He's home listening right now. He's laughing, I'm sure. Congratulations, Nathan Bove, Certified Financial Planner Practitioner. We're all very, very proud of you, and you've done such a great job here on the show and in the office during the daylight hours. Over the years, we've had a lot of fun relationship with many people we've met through the radio program. And when we met during the day, I had a couple times a guy said to me, you know, I thought you were a vampire. I'm always listening to hear you at your voice at night in the darkness, you know. Of course, now we're back to daylight change, and it's not dark anymore. But congratulations to Nathan Bove, of course, Certified Financial Planner Professional. And that's how we're supposed to take. We're not supposed to say CFP because it's not like MD. It's a certification, not a degree in that manner. Very important, very grueling now, more than ever. I watched him study for the last 2 or 3 years straight after, you know, 6 years of college education. So I think Nathan's going to take a break from that stuff for a little while and to bring us some Wednesday night financial history on the program. We're still taking thoughts and suggestions. We did have a few emails over the past about topics for that night. And it's a very popular night because every night is popular on the Money Talk show, we like to think, right? Monday night, of course, our founder, Don Sowa. Tuesday night, Don and his daughter, Donna Grace. And Wednesday night, Nathan and I. And Thursday, back to Don Sowa again. And Friday, here I am wrapping things up again for another week. This might have been every Friday night, 50, I don't know. I might have done this 1,000 times. Maybe 1,000 shows, maybe that many. So we'd love to have input and guidance from you. We spend a lot of time listening to what's going on in the world out there. We come back from our bottom of the hour break and go into the second half of the show. I'm going to spend some time talking about something pretty new. It's not new, but the issue at hand sort of is, and it's about share classes. Different mutual funds have different share classes. They're designed to be used in different situations or designed to either include or not include compensation for a salesperson. Some shares don't include compensation, some do. Some include marketing, some don't. And so share class differential is a new thing. What's very, very exciting about it is the major companies now, and eventually everyone will have that. If you have an account in my office, I have to now scan. You may have bought some nice investments elsewhere, you know, other good folks that did a good job for you, and then they retired, and you came to see us, and we bring an account in the office. We have to scan to make sure that, let's say you have a, you know, XYZ growth fund. I have to make sure that same company, XYZ, doesn't offer a less expensive version of it. Part of my job is to make sure you have the cheapest version because returns will be the same. So every dime that's saved in expenses is a direct profit to the investor today because pretty much commissions are long gone. Although I talked to someone recently about getting into a commissionable retirement product. It's going to be against the law pretty soon. I don't think that's a good idea. just in case you're wondering, folks, I would put the brakes on any big decisions like that. It's got a lot to do with annuities. They're not evil all by themselves. They're just a product. And if used properly, they can be fine. But there's been a history of overuse or misuse of them. And that's governed a lot of what's happening right now. New fiduciary rules, which are going to require anyone eventually, I think, who is handling a retirement account for you to operate like a doctor. You have to do what's the best thing for the customer first. And then you get paid something. Whatever that is, you have to accept it. Doctors go through this, right? Don't they have to deliver care a lot of times and they don't get paid what they think the market is because insurance only pays this for that? They have to do that, you know? So we have to do the right thing. Medicine and money is very, very similar in that they're very important topics in your life. And big mistakes can hurt you a lot, you know? So we need to have rules that don't require you to trust your advisor. I'm going to say that again. We need rules that don't require you to trust your advisor. Now, should you trust your advisor? Of course you should. You should have someone you look up to enough that you do trust them. But that's not the way to operate. okay? You need to be working in a company like ours, and there's many other good ones, where we have systems in place that protect the customer and ensure the fiduciary standard. That means if I get hit by a car tomorrow, the same protections are still there. It doesn't matter who the advisor is on the account. So if you trust your advisor, like nice lady just told me how much she likes her advisor for many, many years, that's wonderful. I'm glad to hear that. But trust should not be the basis of it. It should be part of it. You know, if you don't trust somebody, don't deal with them, right? But trust shouldn't be it, because now you're using your own non-skill, your non-training to make these judgments, who's trustworthy, who isn't. We need, and we're getting them, we need fiduciary standards, at least in retirement accounts, so that no matter who you go see, your interest will always be put first. And then you can say, okay, how much do you charge to put my interest first? And you might find little differences in pricing there, but not too much. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, a station for talking business, and we'll be back.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bove, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome back to the Money Talk Show. This is your station for talking business, AM 790. Hey, if you think you're smart enough to time the stock market, you're a lot smarter than me. The last 20 years, this is current now, 20 years as of like today. If you put $100,000 in the stock market 20 years ago today and left it alone, you would have $441,000. $100,000 would have grown to $440,000 in 20 years if you just left it alone. As I told you, many people do. If you, in your genius, missed the best 5 days in 20 years, your return goes from $440,000 to $290,000. Thinking you're so smart. Missed the best 5 days in 20 years, and it costs you $100,000. If you missed just 10 days in 20 years, you cut your return in half. How many days are there in 20 years? Market days, a lot. You miss 10, and you destroy your return. This is why anyone with any kind of gray hair will tell you that not to try to predict the stock market or any market for that matter. Speculate with a little bit of cash on the side, not your retirement account, different argument. But anyway, don't try to time the market. It won't work. You'll likely be out at the wrong time. I know some really smart people, a lot smarter than myself, who told me early in my career that they could not do it. Housing starts a little softer than expected. February, crazy world going on right now. Housing starts have been up strong for a long time. I wouldn't take that one too seriously. Share classes. Originally, it was the ABCs. You had A share, B share, and C share. And they were all the same investment fund, just A, B, and C meant different commission schedule. An A share meant you paid a front charge right up the front, maybe 4 or 5%. The B share stood for back charge. You paid an annual fee that was low and then only a penalty if you took it out within so many years. And then a C share was the least commitment but the most expensive share class. Some people just didn't want to pay a commission up front. That's why they ended up with a C share. That way, there, after 1 year, if you don't like what you're doing, you can change it, and you've only paid 1%. If you pay 5 or 6% up front, and in 1 year into it you're not pleased, you've paid 5 or 6 years' worth of services up front. So that kind of has gone Neanderthal at this point. And most of the financial world is moving towards fees, clearly in the area of retirement planning. Now, in the new world of mutual funds, you will find expense ratios that go from 0.25, which is 0.25%, to 2.25. And annuities are even higher than that. 2.25 would probably be a C share. 0.25 is probably would be the lowest end of ETFs. If you're curious, the portfolios in my office carry an expense ratio of about 0.6% usually. Typical management fee might be 0.6 for older clients with a reasonable amount of savings. And so the total cost might be 1.2 to 1.6 on average. And that's all the costs included. These mutual funds today give you great diversification. I have a particular portfolio I'm fond of. A few of them, actually. One I'm thinking of at the moment, however, is moderate in risk, has about half stock, 10 different exchange-traded funds, and there are about 5,380 different investments in there. If I wanted to purchase those individual stocks and bonds one at a time, it would cost me $53,000. With the ETFs, it cost me $100. See why? You don't want to own individual stocks and bonds. If you are a pension fund, you do. I believe that's still the right way to handle that. Giant money. $50 billion, you know, giant, enormous piles of money. Individual securities, I still think, is the way to go. However, today, because of no pensions, for many, most of us anyway, unless you're a government employee, you're not going to have a pension, you're going to have a big old pile of money instead. You know, in a $3,000 a month pension is like a $500,000 401k plan. They both have equal value, and both are a great sign of success in your life. So, but the pension's not going to give you that warm and fuzzy feeling because you don't see a big number attached to it. But the pension doesn't have an estate value. After you and your spouse are done with it, there'll be nothing going on to children or heirs. So estate value is one reason why people roll over those pensions and do a lump sum and then just take out monthly what they need. It gives you a little more control. However, case by case, you know, always. Part of the concern about the new fiduciary rules was that this isn't going to upset the apple cart for the people with the big money because they've kind of been handling their money this way for a long time, and it's true, on a fee-only basis. And it was a concern, as I had was concerned initially as well, that what are you going to do if you want to open an account and have $2,000? Is the industry going to say, well, I'm sorry, because of these new rules, you know, that's a bad business proposition for anybody in my business to deal with smaller accounts because it takes a lot of high-end energy to take care of it, and the fees are now very, very tiny, which is good for consumers in the long run. So what's happened is most of these brilliant companies like mine, I'm not going to mention who it is, not really relevant, a great American brokerage financial company, which are the core of, you know, people like me, they developed programs of go out and negotiate with some of the biggest companies out there, five or six or seven different beautiful low-cost ETFs in your IRA account. You put the money in, there's no commission. You may have a total cost of 1.2%. You're trying to make, you know, 7 to 8 to 9 in the long run. No penalties to take it out if you want to do something else, you know, a year or two later. Automatic rebalancing, fund selection. You have the attachment of an advisor you speak to once a year. I'm very impressed with how the industry has handled what was considered to be the biggest problem with the new fiduciary rules, and that was how do you handle smaller accounts? And I'm here to tell you, we already figured it out, and it's a beautiful thing, much, much better for folks than years ago. A 5% commission isn't a terrible thing if you're putting a $2,000 IRA in a bank and someone tells you, well, there's a commission of 5%. That's $100. Nothing wrong with that. You know, people have to get paid here. You know, I do, you do, and the person that helps you there, they have to get paid too. The problem is, what if you're investing $300,000? Is 5% okay? $15,000 cost to you right up front before you do anything? No, it's not, right? But it's the same percent, 5%. So smaller money commissions were never a problem. Never a problem, go check my note to this one, never a problem on the math side. Still a problem on the advisory side because you still take the risk of, if it's a commission, even if it's a small one, that any one individual may only tell you what pays them the biggest commission, and you're still not getting the correct advice. So commissions are evil. They may work in some industries now. I want to see them gone in the financial business. I'm happy about this. But there's a piece of my industry, and they're very professional people as well, who are not for it. And they're people who are good, honest commission salespeople. And so because they did it correctly, they don't feel they should have to change the way they're doing it. And I kind of agree with them. The laws are being changed. It's a big, giant safety net that's being thrown over the industry to catch the small percentage of people who would not do the right thing on their own. So again, no knock on all commissionable products. They can have their place. But I do believe, and all the members of this team, I know I speak for them all, are in complete agreement with the new fiduciary rules. We voluntarily went that direction about 20 years ago, so we're a couple of decades ahead of this one, which is a good thing. Experience is very, very important, I think, when it comes to actual active management of funds and, you know, selection of portfolios based on tax brackets and knowledge of topic 409 and all, you know, those type of things are part of the modern-day advisor's role. So let's play a deeper role. I have quite a few clients who it's almost like you know, financial coach, I would say. Meaning they talk to me about more than just the portfolio that I handle for them. It's about real estate. It's about buying of boats. How do you finance? Do you pay cash? What's the smartest way of doing it, you know? And so the modern-day advisor goes way beyond just the account. That's why we ask you all those questions that drive you crazy when you meet us that you're not used to if you're used to dealing with brokers. Brokers were different people, important role, a lot of transactions, not so much advisory. In the day when you couldn't do those things on your own, today, of course, these transactions anyway can be done very inexpensively. That doesn't mean that you made the decision right. Right? Don't mistake ease of the mechanics of a decision, that the decision itself is easy. You know, what mutual fund to buy? Well, there are 310,000. Here's the list. Which one would you like? That's not easy, right? So don't mistake it's mechanically easy, meaning you can go click online and purchase a fund. That a good decision is not easy ever in this area. Although there are those of you who I've met and done rather well investing on your own, you're those stalwarts. If you truly are that buy and hold, I'll never bail out person, you can do pretty well on your own. But if you're at all jittery, please be careful, because it only takes twice in a 30-year period to panic and sell low to wipe out your nest egg where you might not ever be able to retire. Matter of fact, two decisions in 40 years can ruin your entire financial plan. If you're very well diversified, you should have, if you have $500,000, you should have 8 or more different holdings, couple of thousand individual securities, a nice dividend today of 2 or 3%. If you do have all of these things in place, I believe you can ride out most storms. We don't know what's coming down the road any given moment. It's a crazy world. A lot of these countries with their nuclear capabilities, none of us can tell you what would happen to the value of our investments. Exactly. Supposedly, you know, the aggressive stuff would go down. Defensive things like gold and real estate maybe and agriculture and energy should probably go the other way, go up at a time like that. And so if you find yourself at a time of life where you're a little more afraid than you are greedy, that means it's time to reduce the risk in your account. If you're more afraid of the risk now than you are excited about the gain, it's time to step back a bit. So it's very simple. Close your eyes, have a cup of coffee. Is that how you feel right now? Are you more afraid of the risk than you are? This might not be a great time to change it. It's already declined quite a bit. I think the Dow Jones is down about 6% so far this year. Most people would probably still guess it's positive. Emerging markets are positive, though, year-to-date, up about 1. And I would expect emerging markets to outperform the U.S. this year. Kept in lockstep last year. But the emerging markets performance last year was sort of predictable, where the U.S. was not. This stage of the game, I think we have an excited economy. Having a business person making the decisions, it might be good in some business ways. I don't know if it's the best thing in the long run. We'll find out, right? But a lot of people are excited about that. I tend to favor having a person with business experience running the country. I tend to agree with that myself. Although, of course, there's a lot more knowledge than just that required. Great patience is required. Classiness, hopefully, is required. I don't know how much of that we're getting. But it's a dangerous time, so if you're nervous or afraid, you can give us a call here, or please next week see a local financial advisor and to ask them if you have too much risk in your life based upon where you are. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, and I'll be right back.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bove, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome back to the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talking business. A proud father, can't help but say it one more time before we wrap up the show. Congratulations to my son Nathan, passing his Certified Financial Planner Practitioner grueling exam this afternoon. And so he'll be here on Wednesday night with his usual history lesson for us all. We're talking about what's going on in the industry right now, a little bit about the market. Again, the best advice is always make sure your mix of investments is reflective of your big picture. It's hard, I know. Try not to get caught up in what's happening this moment. We don't market time. We don't talk about that stuff. Every now and then, some young rascal will attempt that, you know, be wrong 6 times and then get it right and then think that they can do it, and it's just crazy. In the last 20 years, if you put $100,000 in the stock market, you would have $400,000. If you thought you were so smart that you took it out just 5 days and missed the best 5 days, it cost you $100,000 being out for 5 days over a 20-year period. Real estate's the same way, meaning that almost always, if you buy quality real estate, and Dave Ramsey will say you make the gain at the purchase point when real estate, right? You got to buy it right. But if you hold it long-term, 20 years, the odds are you'll do pretty well with it. We all know people who bought real estate and didn't do well with it, maybe over even a 10-year period. But long-term is 20. And we, as a society, usually at this stage of the cycle, start twisting definitions around. I hear it in commercials and things, and I hear it people talk about it, you know. Right now, if you ask the average person what's long-term, they probably tell you 3 years. When things are down and we're afraid, and you ask someone what's long-term, they say 20. When things are up and they're positive, they say 3, 4, 5. So you can't change the definition of these things as your mood changes. That's going to cause you problems with your money as well. So try to stick to the macro or find people that can. Don't be trendy. Don't be chasing Facebook stocks if you're my age. You know, I mean, you have some of that in there. If you have mutual funds, I'm sure you got some of that in there. But don't be chasing that stuff. It can plummet very, very quickly. Although some of these individual stocks that have gone up a lot and catch your eye, they tend to be the more aggressive ones, so they can be dangerous on the other side. And no one knows exactly when to purchase them. ETFs are our recommendation for you if you have an itch to scratch and you want to invest on your own. Please consider ETFs at any one of the major companies you'll find out there that offer them today. They're very cost-effective and a much safer way to invest. If you like a company, I would say, well, what about the industry? You know, what's the industry doing? And better to buy industries if you're speculating on stocks that are out of favor. And energy is about the only one left where I think some of those P.E. ratios and things are still on the low side. And you can get some pretty nice dividends in the 1%, 2%, and 3% range there. Excuse me. Dividends are proof of profitability. I am an absolute dividend hound. My clients call me that, the dividend hound. It's just a philosophy that I developed after the S&P had 10 years of no gain. I had some of that in my own account. Imagine 10 years. No gain, 10 years. That stinks. Okay, if you have a nice dividend, at least you got your dividend. It's like rents on the apartment building. Even though we hope the building will grow in the long run, I want proof of profitability every month, every quarter, and that's dividends, and which even some of my clients call it rents. When we talk about the dividends they get from their account, they talk about the rents from the building. And I think it's a very good way of looking at it because the building will fluctuate in value, and there's no way of knowing what that will do, but the rents should stay the same with an inflationary increase over time. Dividends are much more predictable. Long-term return of the S&P 500 is about 9. The dividend's like 2. So look at that ratio. It's about 1/4. But if you reinvest the dividend over the long run, your S&P 500 fund in the end will be almost half your return will be from dividend. So over time, dividends are important. Dividends give you new cash all the time, too, to buy new things that are low. I don't reinvest dividends. All dividends go to cash in my client accounts, just an opinion, and I strategically purchase things that I think are not high. When you reinvest dividends automatically, you buy things high. Everything goes through a cycle where it's high, and you don't want to buy it. So automatic reinvesting of dividends, I think today, because making a purchase is very inexpensive in the days of drip plans with stocks, then that reinvestment of that dividend, I think, is a good idea. But in a big account, making lots of dividends, I don't like it. Dividends to cash, cover the expenses, any withdrawals you might need, and reinvest the difference that's left over in something that's not high in price usually is the best thing. Now, hey, call me old-fashioned, call me foolish, call me all those things, but I think it would be very neat to invest our money into the investments that go up during the five-year period after we buy them, not before. When you make an investment in a mutual fund that has a 30-year average return the last 5 years, you bought the mutual fund after it did its thing, right? We want to make investments that will make those kind of gains if you're playing that game at all during the five-year period after you buy it. And almost never will you find one that did that the last five. You get in it, and it does it the next five. Uh-uh. Almost all 10-year returns are 4 to 6 years, and the other four were horrible. Very important to understand. I call it the five-year rule of equities. Almost always, between growth and value, for example, value stocks pay bigger dividends. They're more conservative. When you see a period of time where 5 years growth has beaten value, like right now, you're going to see a bunch of people leave the value camp and jump on the growth. And 5 years later, guess what happened? It flipped on them again, and they got the inferior return again because these things flip like the weather does, okay? So stay diversified, stay balanced. And if you need an opinion, make sure you go out and get it. It's very important right now. And this can happen innocently. You know, maybe you just got somebody who has a little different twist on things, you know? I would think right now if you're in retirement, I wouldn't want to see anybody any more than moderate risk. I don't think I met a gentleman recently who was, 100% stocks. I said, wow. At 60 years old, man, imagine 70, 10 years goes by, you're 70, because you didn't have any dividends in there, and you still have the same amount of money. You didn't gain a thing. Now you're 74 years old. You don't have time left anymore. And that's why I say as we get older, and it's natural, we all become more and more interested in dividends. Happens at a different age. Happened with me early. I became a dividend hound a bit early in life, probably because of my unique responsibility to all these people that I serve. And so having investments that make a gain like that, and 3% is like what? That's like three times what you can get in a bank, right? 1%. So if the investment is going to give you a 3% dividend, no matter what, it makes me feel good. I like that, I like that. And it's a reflection, again, of my age, my stage of life, and my comfort level with risk. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, a station for talking business. Tune in Monday night for Don So, a Tuesday night, Don and Donna Grace, both on one show, certified financial planner professionals. Next Wednesday night, when Nathan joins me, that'll be our first show together with him now having achieved that same status. This is a very encompassing program, Certified Financial Planner Professional. It involves taxes, estate planning, pensions. Quite a burden. And anyone that can get by it today, especially, I think it's a wonderful thing. Very challenging, more difficult, I think, than when I did it in 1991. Wow. There are a lot of folks in the country who have a certified financial planner designation, and they're not in the financial planning business. I met a few attorneys that have it for knowledge purposes. What a wonderful idea. If you got that kind of energy to get another degree outside of the place you make your dough, good for you. And CFP would be a great place to take a look, I think. Hey, you have a good, safe weekend. Weather's warming up a little bit. No more blizzards, I don't think, coming. And, of course, we keep our fingers crossed, right? Okay, 5 o'clock Monday night. Don Soa right here on AM 790, your station for talk and business. Thank you for listening.
To the great big world, I see them lurking in bookstores, working for the public radio. Yeah, the thing is around, the sack on their back, moving careful and slow.